Hi, everybody. Today is Wednesday, May 21st, 2025, and our friend Leith Maroof is back with us. Welcome back, Leith.
Great to be with you, Nima.
Leith, let's get started with a major win for Hezbollah in Lebanon. Could you let us know what has happened in Lebanon and how do you see the position of Hezbollah?
Yeah, we had these municipal elections across the country. It took a few weeks. For some reason, the government didn't have it all in one day. Probably they wanted to drag the propaganda value of this election, hoping that somehow they can win seats away from Hezbollah and the patriotic nationalist movements in the country. And lo and behold, there was no change in terms of pro-American new parties and old parties winning more seats. In fact, we saw what you're referring to, Hezbollah doing like a landslide win in the Biqa' Valley yesterday. And this is very important because this means that all the propaganda that the West invested in, including its regional vassals like the Saudis, the Turks, and so on, to undermine Hezbollah, all the destruction of the country caused by the Zionists, deliberately directed at civilians in order to make them hate Hezbollah and blame Hezbollah for this destruction, none of this worked to change the electoral representation map in the country. So that's a great, great win for Hezbollah. People were worried about the public mood and what this would mean. And now we have a referendum showing us that the resistance milieu is together. They haven't broken off. And that now there is more people that are worried about the presence of Israel on the border, the HTS, the American interference, that we, you know, even in Beirut here, the highest three candidates on any city council or, you know, mayoral seats, because the city has multiple mayoral seats and city councils is divided into zones, the highest three are all Hezbollah candidates. And this is not only in the Dahiyeh, the southern suburb of Beirut. So again, we see weakness of the imperialist camp. You could imagine if there wasn't all this international interference and hundreds of millions of dollars being dropped by the Gulf, you know, vassals, to interfere in the elections, you could imagine that imperialist camp, how much worse it would have done in those conditions. And that's something that people around the world should understand. You know, usually the collaborationist class cannot exist and win without direct intervention by the West in terms of flooding the money in the market to buy votes and or never-ending propaganda in all the media to try to affect the mood.
Leith, in today's Lebanon, what's the importance? I think many of our audience don't know that much about what is the internal ties between Hezbollah and the government and the different parts of the society in Lebanon. What is the importance of Hezbollah in today's Lebanon, in your opinion?
Well, given that we just watched the takeover of Damascus by Wahhabi death squads in over the last 3-4 months, conducting mass genocide against Alawis, Shia, Christians, Sufis, any and everybody that opposes the imperialist Wahhabi control of Syria. And given that we watched for 20 months now a never-ending and escalating genocide against the Palestinians, Now, I think 100% of the Lebanese population is convinced that if you're not able to protect yourself, you will be, you know, killed and raped and pillaged right on television, and the world will do nothing. So this not only includes all the Hezbollah, you know, and or Shia population in Lebanon. We are seeing over the last 2 months the Christian population get more and more militant here in Lebanon, because they, I mean, they watch the Christians in Gaza being massacred on Christmas. They watch the Christians in Syria being massacred, and the churches around Damascus being, you know, emptied of their visitors and the nuns and priests and so forth. So the Christian population here in Lebanon, whether they are pro-imperialist or anti-imperialist, they're all in a freak-out mood and are getting more and more militarized. And so now, you know, for instance, the summer camps are opening up for high school students and university students, and we see an increase of intake into all of these camps, no matter what, who they are related to. And many of these camps that are related to political parties have military training, arms training for the youth. Okay, so you could see the intake increasing in the Christian population, given that for a long time there was not much militancy. So it's very obvious. Now, all of these indicate that, you know, even if the if some of these militarized Christian groups in Lebanon are anti-Hezbollah or pro-imperialist, they know that if ISIS, al-Nusra, and or the Zionists enter Lebanon, this will not mean the defeat of Hezbollah. It will also lead to the you know, marginalization of the Christians, if not their massacres. And so there's a limit to how much they can collaborate and are willing to collaborate with the West, and that limit is their own survival.
Yeah. Mahmoud Abbas is in Lebanon right now. Pardon me. And considering Mahmoud Abbas and his visit to Lebanon, do you, what's going on? What do they want? It seems that, what is the main reason of this visit, and how are they able to achieve that without Hezbollah? We know that Hezbollah may not agree with what Mahmoud Abbas is asking for.
Yeah, so Mahmoud Abbas is emboldened right now as a collaborationist, you know, traitor against the Palestinian people. Why is he emboldened? Because he sees that the resistance in Gaza is being bombarded daily. That's basically anyone that opposes him, not only Islamic Jihad and Hamas and PFLP and DFLP and others, but also the armed wing of Fatah that has been refusing to take orders from him, Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade. And similarly, this is happening in the West Bank. His own Palestinian Authority security forces have killed almost 70 Palestinians in the last 20 months in the West Bank, including some Fatah armed wing leaders. And he just saw what al-Nusra did in Syria, disarming all the Palestinians, rounding up the leadership of Palestinian Islamic Jihad and PFLP and DFLP, the destruction of the military camps of the Palestinian resistance groups in Syria, their compounds, their warehouses for weapons, their training camps. And what's left, the only field in the region where the Palestinian resistance groups that are in opposition to Mahmoud Abbas that still have their freedom of movement is in Lebanon. So he's coming here to try to legitimize a attack by the Lebanese military on the training camps and military camps of the other Palestinian factions, specifically in the Qalamun region on the border with Syria. And we saw the Israelis, by the way, bombard that those locations over the last month and so. So kind of in a preparation for what Abbas wants. And he wants to disarm the Palestinian factions inside the refugee camps around Lebanon, the 12 refugee camps that are here in the country. Now, he definitely has a president in Lebanon and a prime minister in Lebanon that are in the same camp as he is, meaning they're all vassals of the United States, and they will be attempting to do such a thing. The Lebanese army, if it's empowered by both Abbas and the Lebanese government here to attack the refugee camps and or these training camps and attempt to disarm them, will be in direct confrontation with the Palestinian resistance here. And so Hezbollah is not going to allow this to happen, number one. And I don't think within the Lebanese military, they will accept such orders if they come. Because, you know, the last time the Lebanese military confronted Palestinian military groups was in Nahr el-Barid, refugee camps in the early 2000s, mid-2000s, in outside Tarablus in the north, Tripoli in the north of Lebanon. And that was an operation that the Lebanese military lost a lot of men in. And it took more than, almost a year of a battle inside the refugee camp that led to the total destruction of the refugee camp. And the Lebanese military ruined this reputation for a long time. People didn't forget that, even in, you know, as Lebanese citizens, we're not happy about what happened there. So this is not a reality that could happen. But it's clear that Mahmoud Abbas is here to play this political game and the propaganda game, add to the public delegitimization efforts against the resistance in general. And that's as much as this is going to lead to.
In your opinion, right now in Gaza, with the situation that we know that they're in, and here is the, let me just see the numbers here. Since yesterday, 82 murders and 262 injuries. And since March 18, 2025, has reached 3,509 murders and 9,909 injuries in Gaza. We've learned that European Union or somehow the British government and Irish government, they're trying to do something with Israel. How do you see the political movements in Europe to put pressure on Netanyahu?
It's a little bit too little too late. I mean, the Western elite have always been on purpose one step behind the time. And every offer that they put forward, all the way from the Oslo Agreement of the two-state solution, is only offered because it's impossible. It's too late. When they offered two-state solution in the 1990s, already the Zionist colonists were integrated in the West Bank and impossible to remove. There was no way to create a state in the West Bank. That's the only reason they offered it. Similarly, right now, they're talking about sanctioning Israel or boycotting, okay? But already Israel is in the final stage of the genocide against the Palestinians. And over the last 4 months since the coming of Trump, the military buildup of weapons in Israel affords it now to actually have its supply cut, let's say, from Europe, and it will still can continue in this genocide and finish it. So this is just theatrics. What is needed by these governments and what is sorry about that, what is their responsibility under international law is to stop the genocide, to intervene militarily to stop it, especially given that these the weapons that are killing the Palestinians are weapons made in Europe and North America. So they have a primary duty to actually intervene militarily to stop this genocide, and all they're doing right now is wasting more time, giving more time for the Zionists to conduct the final solution and attempt to eradicate genocide the remaining Palestinian civilians in Gaza. Well, you know, the United Nations just told us that in the next 2 days there'll be 15,000 children in Gaza that will die from starvation. That's in the next 2 days. So in the next month, as the Israeli invasion advances in Lebanon, in Gaza, you know, we should be expecting that at that point there will be no Palestinian civilians left in Gaza. This is a kind of a last moment, you know, for anyone to intervene. This doesn't mean that the Palestinian resistance will surrender or will be defeated. The Israelis will have to kill every Palestinian in Gaza for the resistance to cease. And they have made that conclusion, and they are acting on that conclusion. And the United States is facilitating this final solution.
Hamas has reported yesterday and today we've learned that there is no aid coming to the Gaza Strip. And do you see in the near future, maybe today, tomorrow, and the day after tomorrow, they're getting some sort of aid, or we're not going to say, we're not going to hear that?
Yeah, the United Nations also confirmed that today, saying that there is no aid that came in to Gaza. And you know, there was an interview or a sitting with Netanyahu yesterday that was aired on Israeli media, or, you know, he's chatting with some other Jewish supremacist groups around him, and he's telling them that they have to let in a few trucks here and there, because the gathered group was, you know, not happy that he allowed in the beginning of the week or end of last week those four trucks that entered as the American Israeli prisoner was released. So he said that, you know, he told them that they need to act and enter a few trucks here and there just to allow them more time to conduct their military operations. So this is it. This is as simple as it is. And there will be no aid coming in that will have any significant effect to save lives. If there is something that will come in, it will come in that manner, like just a drop to give some news items that will air here and there while the genocide is accelerated, and then another few trucks here and there that will again take more media space while the genocide is being conducted until the end of the genocide. That's where it's going if nobody intervenes militarily. And it seems like the only ones willing to intervene militarily are Yemen and Ansarullah, and their, you know, the how many missiles they're sending, the intensity of their fire is not enough to change the course of the battle on the ground.
Late, CNN reported that Israel is preparing to attack Iran. And it seems that the United States said that they're not going to be part of that if they decide to do. Do you see this sort of mindset, or if they're serious to act on it, is that going to be a suicide? Is that going to be a some sort of devastating escalation in the region?
Yeah, I mean, look, Israel doesn't have the military capabilities to attack Iran on its own and or to sustain a full-out war with Iran on its own. And this has been true since October 7th. Israel doesn't have the military capabilities to defeat Hezbollah by itself and or Hamas by itself, and of course, let alone Iran and or Yemen. And all the nonstop, you know, surveillance that the West is giving, nonstop supply of weapons that the West is giving, and at times the involvement of American and NATO jets in the bombardment of both Yemen and Lebanon and Gaza, this is what allowed Israel to continue until now. So a war with Iran will entail that all NATO's air power is involved, even if it's camouflaged as if it's Israeli. You know, the Americans right now, after the experiment in Yemen, have decided to conduct, you know, covert warfare behind somebody else because their bases in the region, the oil and gas resources of their vassals and their own aircraft carriers are in a huge danger if the war continued between the United States and Yemen. And now we see Israel supposedly conducting this war. Most probably it's American jets flying out of Israel, you know, just pretending to be Israeli. And that's what will happen in the situation of a war with Iran. But I personally think after the war on Yemen and the failure of the United States there, it is now less likely that there will be a war with Iran. That's only if we calculate that the final goal of the United States is the protection, or the, its ultimate goal is the protection of the Zionist colony. But the United States has another goal, which is the containment of China. And those two things, in a way, contradict as goals for the United States. Because the only way the United States can contain China right now is to set a ring of fire around it that doesn't allow the export of its products and or the import of energy like gas and oil to China. And the United States can't do that if the Gulf and Iran and the oil fields in the Gulf and the transportation paths through the Suez Canal and others are, you know, peaceful and stable. The United States, you know, needs to sacrifice the oil of the Arabs, needs to sacrifice the trade routes in the region in order to cut off China. So will these two priorities, you know, clash? Will actually the United States accept Israel attacking Iran because it wants the oil and gas in the region to, you know, be set on fire and for the, you know, trade routes to be cut off from China? That's questions that I personally don't have answers to right now.